In the desert oasis where stories ignite, Skip's little bar, a beacon of light. From the Coachella Valley stars to cool everyday Joes, join Patrick and Randy, let the stories flow. At Big Conversations Little Bar, the magic spreads near and far. Backed by the McCallum Theater's grace, celebrate the voices that shape this place.
From the coveted corner booth in a little bar at the center of the Coachella Valley universe, welcome to another Big Conversation with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence, presented by the McCallum Theater. Visit McCallumTheater.org or reach the box office at 760-340-2787. Gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Howard. We are back here at the coveted corner booth at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California. And we are very excited for another edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. My name is Patrick Evans, and I'm joined, as I am each and every week for the last 400 episodes of this thing, Randy Florence, my spiritual guru and the sidekick extraordinaire.
You know, I don't want any responsibility anymore for being your spiritual guru.
Oh, no, it's all on you.
Nobody's noticed a change.
I've absolved the Catholic Church and I've turned to you.
Hey, so, I got a question for you.
Okay. Wait, before you do that, we want to give a big shout out to our principal, primary, wonderful sponsor, the McCallum Theater. And they're getting ready to launch their brand new season. And that's going to be online. You can get tickets, McCallumTheater.org. We so appreciate their support of our podcast.
We love McCallum Theater.
We want you to support them. Okay, now, you have a question.
I'm looking at the temperature today, and it says that today it was 12 degrees over normal. I remember last June being pretty brutal. So what does that, like, the average of the last 20 years?
The aggregate, what we call normal.
Mm-hmm.
The normal high for the date is 102, and that's an aggregate of actually the last 30 or 40 years.
Okay.
So it is a lengthy period of time where we aggregate that number.
But my weather said it was 12 degrees over normal.
What app were you using?
Weather.com.
Okay, don't trust weather.com. They're located in Atlanta, and I guarantee you that nobody who's putting any information into that app has ever even been to Palm Springs, California. So they don't know shit. And I'm going to tell you, and our listeners, if you are relying on that app, you are getting very bad information that is uninformed.
So do you have an alternative that we could pay attention to?
Yes, the First Alert Weather app from KESQ, which is available both in Google and also the Android store, wherever they do that, and Apple. So
that's really what this is all about.
And get real information from people who actually live here. I've lived here for 23 years. I've lived here longer than any. I've lived here longer, by the way, than all of the other meteorologists in this market combined. So,
okay.
They should all quit. But that's it. I'm just kidding.
You sound a little bitter about
that.
I'm
not bitter at all. I'm just saying.
You sound bitter about not being bitter.
I'm bitter about that app that you're listening to. That's nonsense.
It was free.
Stop doing that. Yeah, don't look at apps. They're bad.
Okay.
And like, do you have an iPhone?
I do.
All right, that, like the Apple weather thing, their own built-in app. I don't know where. I think that's a weather.com thing, and that's BS too. So, anyway.
You sound a little bit touchy about that. I won't bring that topic up anymore.
No, you can bring it up anytime. Okay. I'm not touchy at all. I'm just steering you.
Does he sound touchy to you?
And everybody else in the right direction. Because I want everybody to get good weather information. You know what I'm saying?
I do now.
And
I didn't before.
Let's see. So far, here's case in point. I'm looking at the actual data. The average high for the date is 102. So far, we've clocked 106 degrees. So we are not 12 degrees above average.
Too damn hot.
But you think it's too hot because you're using the wrong app. If you were looking at real data, you'd be like, oh, this isn't bad at all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it feels a lot cooler because I'm looking at real data.
106 is fine. Everything's fine. Look, let's get to our guest because she's delightful and she too would recommend the KESQ.
She just left.
She did. She left. We are here with Laura Lee Jackson, who I've been here for 23 years. She was one of the first people I ever met because we got to anchor together right off the bat when I moved here to the Coachella Valley. Laura Lee, welcome.
That's right. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be sitting here with Randy Florence and Patrick Evans today. Great to be here. And I will say the weather apps, honestly, if I can't watch you, Patrick, I do refer to the weather app sometimes, but they're not accurate. And when you sit on the news anchor desk with you and hear all of his detailed weather, you really do appreciate the meteorology and all of the work you put into that. So I agree with that.
Oh, I forgot.
You've
so
earned
don't
the,
listen to the apps.
You've earned the $20 I promised you if you do that. Thank you,
Patrick. I know you told me to say that.
Before we get into it, and I mean, you've had a really fun and interesting career here, and it continues to grow and expand, and we want to talk about that. But you are Canadian.
I am Canadian. I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, so and I'm very proud of that.
Let's just talk about how pissed off you are about the tariffs. Let's just go right into it. Like,
you know,
damn it.
Yeah.
Did you almost leave?
Yeah, I mean, I had the option of leaving. That is one good thing, right? People said, you have the option of leaving. You can go or stay.
You can.
Yeah, I mean.
How much time do you still spend up in,
you know,
in Vancouver?
I go every summer, usually. Sometimes in between. My family, close family, is living here now in Palm Springs. Yeah. So I have
and you raised
relatives.
Your kids here.
We did raise our kids here, yeah. So I do get back once a year, at least, because I love to visit my relatives. And Vancouver is beautiful, especially
in the
summertime.
I've never been. I hear it's an amazing place.
Probably one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
I don't leave this. The weather's so great.
He loves the 112s and the 106s.
I love the heat.
He's so full of bullshit.
You need to come out to Vancouver with me.
I'd be happy to.
Oceanside. He didn't like it in the winter here. He left. When the weather's good.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I don't deserve it. I had to leave town because I don't deserve the good weather.
You had to leave town. You did. All right. When you and I met, they had launched the CBS affiliate.
Right, CBS 2, local.
Jim and Jackie Lee Houston launched CBS Local 2. Bill Evans was the GM. He had been the GM at KESQ. And they brought a lot. They poached a lot of talent from KESQ. That's why there was bad blood for a long time between the two stations.
Really, was there? Oh, I didn't know this story.
Oh, God,
yeah. Back then. What was that, 20 plus years ago?
It was 23 years ago.
Yeah. Did it ever get physical?
Yes, actually.
Who'd you have to beat up?
I think Chris Long and Jeff Stahl got into a shoving match at one point.
It's probably still going on.
No. Jeff's a very calm guy, but, you punch a button. Katie barred the door. So you started at KESQ. So before we launched the CBS affiliate, that was your first on-air gig, right?
It was. I was back in Virginia, actually. I just finished my master's program, but I was also working for Regent University.
Yeah.
I got my master's in journalism. While I was doing that, I was anchoring a national newscast for the Christian Broadcasting Network. And then I did some weekend work for Wavy TV, which was the NBC affiliate. I was what did they call me? The Wavy Gravy Lady, because the station was Wavy. And every Saturday morning, I would go to diners and just talk to people about current events and
wavy
issues of
gravy.
The day. So the Wavy Gravy Lady. I would go to these diners and, you know, I'd be in the kitchen with the chefs and the cooks and, you know, they're making their biscuits and gravy and their pancakes and I would come home smelling so bad. Like, I'd have to wash my clothes.
Did you ever see anything that I'm not eating here?
Well, sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, Waffle House was one of my favorites. Gosh, that was a fun place because you kind of really learned the process of how they make their food. And I love Southern food.
Scattered, covered, and smothered.
It
Waffle
is
House.
Covered. It wasn't the healthiest. Oh. Like, you don't want to think
Sounds
about
good,
what you're eating, but
Waffle Houses have the best food.
They do.
Sidebar. So when my now wife and I flew back to Virginia for my mother's funeral, my wife had never been to Virginia. We really just started dating, so it was a weird trip all the way around. But we flew in and got in the middle of the night, and the only thing that was open was a Waffle House. And it was, you know, it was in February. It was dead of winter. And we ate at the Waffle House. And then when we got back to the hotel, our clothing smelled so much of Waffle House, we had to put it out on the balcony of the hotel just to air out.
And she stuck with you.
She totally did, yeah.
He smelled good. He smelled like food if you're hungry.
She figured that this is the worst it gets. Things are going to be okay.
We'd been dating, I mean, maybe a couple of months. And then my mother passed. And you can tell a lot of things about somebody. But in that moment where, you know, you're at kind of your lowest. And I called her and I said, you know, Mom passed, and we knew it was, and she said, well, what are the flight arrangements, and let's just make the trip.
And where's the nearest Waffle House?
And where's the nearest? So, you know, she's a quality gal. When
she is.
So.
Yeah. But no, that was a great experience, you know, and just meeting the locals there. It was a really good chance for me to get to know people in Virginia and what was important to them. So that was a lot of fun.
That station's based in Virginia Beach.
Norfolk, Virginia.
There's a lot of Navy.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, a lot of Navy military folks there. But yeah, that was my first time actually live on the air. And I was so nervous. I remember my first live shot. I was just shaking, you know. You know, you probably remember those days. Or maybe not, Patrick. You were always so like... Right.
Oh, no.
Well, the first episode of this podcast, he freaked out.
But it was such a good experience. And, you know, I'd go home and I'd watch my air checks. And, you know, it's like, I didn't look that nervous. You know, you feel that it's worse than it actually is. But, you know, I loved it. I loved it. And I, you know, did my anchoring there, learned a lot. And then when I finished my graduate program, I came out here and started working for KESQ. So I did the morning show.
You interned at some pretty cool spots.
I did.
Larry King Live Entertainment Tonight.
Wait a minute. Tell us about Larry King Live. Give us a Larry King story.
Larry King was great. So I was interning with the showbiz unit at CNN during my college years, and Larry King had a few dates on his calendar to come into town. So
he
was
more
chosen.
Than a few dates. He had seven wives.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. It was funny because
Those aren't dates.
The day before I was scheduled to intern with him, I think Hard Copy and some of the, you know, the tabloid magazine type shows had broke the story about, you know, Larry King being this womanizer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be interning with him tomorrow. But, you know, it was such a fabulous experience to see him work. And actually, I didn't see him work as much as his staff. And how they prepared the show, how they communicated with him during the day, letting him know the topics and the guests that he was having. And he'd walk in and just be like, hey, I'm Larry King. And he'd just walk up to the set and did his thing. And it was like, wow, this guy's really good, you know.
What was the Entertainment Tonight thing like?
Entertainment Tonight was good. I actually worked in the morgue. I was an intern in the morgue. So basically, we would do all the clippings of different famous people and file them. Because, you know, when someone passes... you have to have an obit ready immediately. So we would file all of those clippings from back then. It was newspapers. Now it's all digital, right? So I was cutting
and pasting. You called that the morgue?
They called it the morgue. Yes.
So they had the obits ready to go. We have yours ready to go. Randy.
At least you haven't killed me yet.
No, we're not going to kill you, but we can handle it.
The nice thing is I've learned how to do it, so now I can kind of prepare my own, you know. But no, it was really interesting with people. People would say to me, like, where did you work in Entertainment Tonight? Were you on in the studio with John Tesh and Mary Hart? Sometimes I was. I got to do that. But mainly it was in the morgue. But,
so you interned when Mary Hart was there as the host.
Yes, she
and
was
now
the
you
host.
Guys live right here in town. You probably hang out.
I know. And John Tesh has a place here.
That's right.
And in fact, John Tesh, I met him at a conference because I work at College of the Desert as a professor of media. And I met him at a conference. We were ready to start a radio program. And John Tesh was there. And I said, hey, John, do you remember me, that little intern? He was kind and said, yes, I do. I don't think he did. I was always in the morgue. So, but no, he actually was great and helped our radio station get started at the college and donated some equipment and really kind of gave us a pep talk and said, this is what you need to do and put us in contact with the right people. So he was very supportive.
He had a pretty crazy career, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. He did. And you know what? I did have him on my podcast during COVID. I did a Media Quest podcast, just interviewing people that are of the media background to give my students a chance to learn about their journey. And John Tesh was one of my guests.
Wow.
I didn't know he was homeless. His story is fascinating.
Yeah, he's
right
really,
now or
no,
in the
no, no, not
yeah,
now.
Connie kicked him out.
Thankfully, he's not. But yeah, he has had quite the journey and the road to success. I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah,
well,
and he's just kind and gracious, and was lovely to give me the time. In the podcast, yeah.
I've met him a couple times. He's a very gracious guy. The first time I met him was at the opening of Disney California Adventure. Mm-hmm. But the second time was here at the food bank in Desert Hot Springs. And the name escapes me.
Find?
No. Food Now.
Food Now. Okay.
Food Now in Desert Hot Springs. And I was helping to give away turkeys prior to Christmas, and he and Connie were there doing the same thing.
Wow.
They were, and so
nice.
I think he... remembers those days where it was tough for him, and he gives back in really, really nice ways.
That's a great story.
It is a great story.
Thank
and I do get the sense of that. He seems very giving, and not just giving of money, but giving of time. And what can I help you with? I was an intern with him how many years ago? 25, 30 years ago.
And a couple of amazing careers he's had.
Right. I called him up, and he like, of course I'll do that for you. And I'm like, wow, this is huge. So, you know, in my house, kicking my kids out. Hey, quiet, guys. I've got John Tesh. It all worked out. So he was great.
That's
fond
great.
Memories of him, definitely.
Yeah. He's a terrific guy.
Yeah.
We should try to get him on the podcast.
You know
him.
He
would be great.
I don't know him that well. Yeah. Laura Lee knows him.
Well, you know what? I think he still does have a place here. I'm not 100% sure, but I knew when I had seen him at this conference, he was saying he did have a place, and him and Connie would come out here frequently. So, yeah, definitely. He would be definitely worth
the people you have rubbed shoulders with.
I know. It's been kind of exciting.
If you think back on it, it's pretty cool.
It is cool. Yeah, you know what? They always say when you get into media, you know, don't be starstruck. But of course you are to a certain degree, right? But, you know,
I couldn't talk to Patrick for like a month and a half at the beginning of this podcast.
Look me in the eye.
But, you know, these people are real. They're real people. They have real lives. They're, some of them are not so kind. Some of them are kind. But, you know, it was just really a great experience. I always like to learn from people's journey. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do that with my students, give them a podcast of interviewing people. Because I think so many people think, oh, I can never achieve that because I didn't start like that, or I didn't have that, or I didn't have that support from my family. A lot of these people didn't have anything, and they made themselves out of nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a lot of their stories are so encouraging, and we need to hear them, because I think everyone can succeed at some level of whatever their desire of success is, you know? So...
You got your undergraduate degree in sociology. Did I read that?
Yes, sociology and communication.
How did that move to television? Well, in communication.
I had no idea what I wanted to do when I went to college. I just wanted to get out of the house.
There wasn't television in Canada when you were growing up. They didn't have that.
Well, we did.
Oh,
we
you did. Do? You do? You have it up there.
I did, great. And I was fascinated by the news. I had parents that were very up on current events, watched the news every night. So my dinner table was not so much a conversation among the family. It was watching the news, right?
But it was Canadian news.
It was Canadian news.
Mainly maulings of polar bears.
It was good news. Just a little bit different than down here. But
a lot longer to insult our guests on this show.
That's okay.
I'm not insulting morally, just Canadians.
You're not insulting me. I've heard it all before. So yeah. When I go back,
that was an insult. We're not even original.
Well, that's true.
When I go back, I live in my igloo, you know, and I have my Eskimo gear and my little dog sled out in the back. And yeah, no, but but so I went to college. I actually was somewhat musical, thinking maybe a music major would work. And then I thought, well, let me just take some communication classes. They sounded easy, you know.
What was your instrument of choice? Did you play piano?
I played the piano. I wrote music and I sang. I sang in my church growing up. Not very good, but
do you still play?
I do a little bit. I am not as musically inclined, I think, as I was. I was very passionate about it when I was growing up, and I love music. I just feel that, you know, I don't know. Maybe my voice is getting older. It doesn't sound as good. I like talking better than singing. But yeah, so then I did study sociology. I had taken a sociology class, and I fell in love with it. And I had the greatest professor. Dr. Nishida was his name, and he just believed in me, and I loved sociology. I loved understanding people.
At Biola.
But then I did an internship, and I always encourage my students to do an internship because you're never going to know. I worked at a child guidance center, and I'm like, I loved it. I felt like I was making a difference, but it wasn't for me. And then I did an internship at KNBC in Los Angeles. Worked with David Garcia, who we worked with at CBS,
yes,
too.
Lovely, lovely human being.
Environmental reporter.
Yes.
And
Earthman.
I fell in love with broadcasting. Yeah. I fell in love. I mean, Patrick, you know, you go to work every day. You meet new people. It was exciting. I was just fabulous, you know, just overwhelmed at how much I enjoyed it. So that's when I thought, I'm going to pursue this.
If you were not in love with media before meeting David Garcia, you would be after. He had so many amazing... Right. He was, at one point, he was the White House correspondent for ABC News.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No,
yes.
David had a huge career.
He has a lot of stories and a very interesting man.
Yeah.
A long, long career. So it was nice for me when I came back to CBS, too, to sit next to him in our desk. I'm like, here I, you know, kind of idolized this man who I thought is bigger than life.
And he was bigger.
Because
he left network and then he went to LA and he worked at, I think, the ABC and the NBC affiliates.
I think he worked for KABC, but then when I interned, it was with KNBC.
Yeah. And then he retired and came out here. And when CBS launched, basically the news director just kind of called and said, maybe you'd be interested, maybe not. We don't know, but we're doing this and we'll give you a show. And he said, yeah, I'd love to. And
You know, I'm amazed at all the podcast episodes that we've done and some of the people that we've had from the media and broadcasting on here. I'm amazed at how small that world is and how many people that you know that other people know from other parts of the country and such.
So my favorite David Garcia story was when he was working at ABC News and they were covering the president and they traveled to Dallas and they were at the Big Hilton in Dallas. And Sam Donaldson was also a big, you know, reporter.
Yeah.
And David's sound asleep, but he was rooming with Sam Donaldson. The hotel called him and said, Mr. Garcia, would you please come down to the lobby? We're having a problem with Mr. Donaldson. So David gets dressed and he goes down in the lobby and they had the Dallas Hilton apparently has like this big lobby with trees. And Sam Donaldson was drunk as a skunk and he climbed one of the trees and he was hooting like an owl at people walking by.
That never happens with broadcasters, Patrick.
It's only happened three times on this
those
podcast.
Those are the stories you don't hear in the news.
My other favorite David Garcia story is he was very proud of his 13 Emmys.
Yes.
They moved, and he called me one day, and he said, by the way, I was wrong. I found an Emmy that had fallen behind the cabinet. We have 14 of them.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
They're very proud of their Emmys, and they should be. So. Yeah. But yeah, so, he really gave me a good learning opportunity, and I just fell in love with that industry. But, you know, Patrick, it's not an easy industry to get into. So, you know, you say, okay, this is what I want to do. You intern, you work on your tapes, and you get better by working at all these little places and get experience. And, yeah. And then doors opened for me in Virginia and then at KESQ. So it's been a fun journey.
So when you came back and started working at KESQ... you had a great resume. I mean, they were very lucky to get someone with that kind of experience because a lot of times first-timers don't have that.
Right. You know, so. Yeah, I did have a lot of experience, but I also didn't have a lot of experience. So I really learned a lot at KESQ, and I felt like I really, honed my skills and got better at what I did. So, yeah, it was great. I was thrown into, you know, back in the day, we didn't have a producer in the morning, so we were anchoring and producing newscasts. And that was something that was different for me because I'm like, okay, now I'm wearing how many hats? You know?
Yeah, but, well, and we're a small market. And so, you had interned in all of these big places. And then
you get spoiled watching all the big guys do their thing.
You know, probably at that time we were market 146 or something like that. And I think we're still similar, 143 maybe. But now you're down in the trenches and you're writing your own copy, you're producing your own show, you're timing your own show. Yeah. I mean, it was
running your own teleprompter and doing everything, you know, communicating with the director and everything like that. But you know what? I always say, that's the way to start because then you learn everything, right? And then you understand everyone else's positions in the newsroom and you respect them a bit better. I think if you walk in saying, I'm only going to do one thing, it's not realistic and you're not a lot of value either. You know, if you can jump in and help out wherever, well, then you sometimes get taken advantage of, right, Patrick?
Well, you do. You always will, but it's okay because you're still learning stuff.
Right.
We have young kids who come into the station these days and they're like, oh no, I'm here to do this and I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, well, you're an idiot because first of all, you should learn to do that.
Right.
And second of all, there may come a day where we need people to do everything that you can do. And if you only do one thing, we don't really need you.
Right.
And
make yourself valuable.
Yeah, absolutely.
You come to the desert for the job?
I did. I was finishing up my graduate program and KESQ called me. So my family being from Vancouver always vacationed to Palm Springs.
I wondered how much you knew about the area.
So as a little girl, every year my parents would get in the RV and we'd come down to Cathedral City and stay in the RV park. Yes, my family was big RV people. I loved it. It was a great way to travel. But we just had the most...
It's a long RV ride.
It is. 2 days from Vancouver to Palm Springs.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought.
No, but we drove pretty straight. So it was a long drive. My brother and I would be in the back seat, there's only so many games you can play, travel games, before you start getting on each other's nerves. So, but no, great experience. But I always loved Palm Springs. So when the door opened here, I was like, it was a no-brainer. I would rather go to Palm Springs than somewhere in the Midwest. Not to put down the Midwest, but I was familiar with it. It was like coming to a place that I felt somewhat at home in.
Sure.
And I knew my parents would be down visiting and it would be an easy trip for them. So it really was a blessing in disguise. And, I worked with a great team of people. I learned a lot. We were on Cook Street, that old building, KESQ. Yeah, I did the morning show.
Now it's a defunct pot dispensary.
I know.
Yep. It used to be defunct.
No. So question for you, though, because when I met you, you had already... transition. I was one of the last people that got hired before CBS went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys had already. But what made you come over
to CBS too. So let me tell you the story. So I did get pregnant with my first daughter, and in 2000 she was born. I decided to take some time off and enjoy my daughter, and I'm glad I did that. It was the best decision I ever made.
Oh, so you were coming back into
I was coming back in. So when CBS 2 started, I did get a phone call. Hey, would you be interested? I said, I would love to come back, but I don't want to do the full-time deal. I would love to come back and do something part-time, so whatever that looks like. And they were gracious enough to work with me and said, okay, would you be interested in doing the morning show? I said, sure, I'd love it. Tom Tucker was my co-anchor.
Tom Tucker, that's right.
We were the first newscast to launch.
The Family Guy anchor man was named after our Tom Tucker.
Oh, really?
I think so. I think that's
100%. Yeah. But he doesn't have a mustache.
Yeah.
Our Tom Tucker.
So it was a good experience.
So you jumped back in, and that was a great gig because you did the morning show. We didn't have a noon.
No, we didn't.
There was no noon broadcast. Right. And you started, it was you, Tom, and Rich Field.
That's right. Rich Field was doing the morning show with us. Yes. It was a fun group. And what I liked about it, the morning show in itself is a lot lighter of a newscast, right? I mean, watching Patrick and Jeff and Angela, it's so great. You guys have a lot of fun.
Well, Angela's great. Jeff is,
well, I've worked with Jeff, so I know Jeff. I can tell you stories, but.
Oh, here we go. All right. On episode 2.
That's right. We're keeping you around
Keep me around for the next episode. I'll give you the dirt. No. But yeah, I mean, it was, the mornings are fun. And, you know, Richfield is in some ways a comedian. You know, in his own mind, because, you know, he did the whole Price is Right. He was a funny guy. Tom was funny. So we had a lot of healthy banter, I think, on that show.
So Rich was doing weather for CBS Local 2, but he had had a history with game shows.
Right.
Like regional game shows, but they were produced by the same people who produced The Price is Right. So all of a sudden, then, he was taking some time off because he was filling in. They were running through people to be the announcer on The Price is Right because the gentleman who was Johnny Olsen passed away. And so Rich eventually got the job.
Wow.
And finished the run with Bob Barker. And then I guess Drew Carey brought in his own guy. But
well, that's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, Rich went from Little Palm Springs CBS Local 2 to The Price is Right.
Right.
I want to go back a little further, though.
Okay.
Because I want to figure out how you got here. Growing up.
Yes.
What was life like?
She drove here.
In Vancouver?
In an RV. Growing up. Yeah, what did your parents do?
My dad was actually a builder, carpenter. He was, my dad grew up in Holland, so he had a lot of really great woodworking skills. So when he came over to Canada.
He was making wooden shoes?
You know what? My grandfather did have a wooden shoe factory, and he did make wooden shoes. Absolutely. So, you know, he was a very talented man with his hands. He created all kinds of stuff. But when he came to Canada, he didn't have an opportunity to get an education. So he just dove into the job workforce and started working and really gained some skills in carpentry and had his own business, did a lot of kitchen cabinets and wall units and furniture for a lot of developers in the Vancouver area. So, yeah, he was great. My dad had a strong work ethic. He, you know, worked 12-hour days and loved what he did. And
were they supportive of the direction that you moved?
They were. I think my mom was like, why don't you stay in Canada close to home? You know, I think it's hard for a mother to let their daughter go. But, you know, they also saw the passion I had to do something that I wanted to, even though I wasn't 100% sure what that plan was. But, you know, they were very supportive of me going. And, of course, they have a place to come visit. So it made them, you know, travel to Palm Springs more and just take that two-hour trip to L.A. to go visit Laura Lee. So.
Before we go on, we're going to take a quick break. We want to acknowledge our presenting sponsor, the McCallum Theater. Get ready for the next great season at the McCallum Theater. Tickets are on sale now. Let's hear a word from them.
At the McCallum Theater, we believe in placing arts at the heart of learning. Since 97, our education department has inspired nearly 1 million students and community members through dynamic performances and immersive arts education programs. From the Palm Desert Choreography Festival to our Open Call Talent Project, we provide powerful platforms for emerging artists. Experience how the arts contribute to personal growth and enlightened citizenship. Your entertainment, your theater, the McCallum Theater. Learn more at mccallumtheater.org.
Once again, our thanks to the McCallum Theater, Gary Keith, the chairman of the board, and Yvonne Bell has just been named the president and CEO.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to having her on the program. She's been there in the development department for a long time, but she is I think, a terrific addition. So
anything we can do with McCallum.
Absolutely. We are here with Laura Lee Jackson, a young lady who has been off and on, someone I've had the pleasure of anchoring with over the years. And you were talking about your family history. And
Yeah. So, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, helped dad with the business, do the books and all of that. So I really had great parents that were supportive in all I did. And I, you know, I look at my upbringing and I'm just so grateful. I was raised in a beautiful country with great people. I think Canadians are probably the nicest group of people you'll ever meet. And I'm very thankful for that. I'm also thankful I have options to move back if I want. One great thing, too, all my girls are Canadian. I was able to get them their Canadian citizenship. And they can
and you
have some options.
Three girls?
I have three daughters, yes. My oldest is 25, and my youngest is going to be 20 on Thursday. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah, they're growing up way too fast, but they're turning out to be great girls, and I'm very proud of them. But, yeah, so I'm very thankful that I had that upbringing. I'm very thankful to be here in the United States as well. I love this country, and I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to come here. But, yeah, Canada's great.
So
and I love my Canadian friends and family.
You are now, I mean, you still dabble a bit in anger. You were filling in.
I do. So, Patrick, this is the funniest story because, you know, I thought you think your anchoring days are over, 20 years. I'm completely embedded in the college. I got tenured. I'm faculty there, loving my job. I get a call from the news director at KESQ, and I'm like, this is weird. She left a message, and I thought, why is she trying to reach out to me? Maybe they need some interns at the station. So I called her back, and she was talking to me about, hey, we have, you know, someone going on maternity leave. We were trying to juggle around some schedules. Would you be interested in coming back and helping us anchor? I was like, wow, can I still do it? It's been 20 years. You know, I gave it up, and I'm teaching now. So I gave it some hard, long thought, and I thought, you know, why not? It's like riding a bike, right? Kind of. Hopefully.
I think it is. I mean,
you know, you age more.
But you didn't miss a step. I mean, I don't think at all.
Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting. I didn't. I felt like there were some things I needed to brush up on, and things had changed in the newsroom from when I was doing it 20 years ago. So I think technology changes.
Yeah.
Even though you teach it and you know it, it's different when you do it. So I think that was the best experience for me, though, as a teacher. Because I'm in it, working in it. I no better way to get back to those students than
your knowledge. Students must have thought that was pretty cool.
They did, and they're like, Professor Jackson, we saw you on the news last night, you know, and we talk about the news and, well, what did you guys think? How was it written? How do you think I did? And we had open conversations, and I thought it was the best thing ever.
Yeah, you've been teaching for a long time, as you mentioned in your but you do both radio and television. Your radio station has won a number of awards.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, and going back to that John Tesh donation, I mean, that really kicked things off for us. But we did start that program. It was our first broadcasting outlet for students. And we had started submitting to the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System. They have a conference and award ceremony in New York every year, and we started winning awards. This past year, we won Best Community College Radio Station in the entire country.
That's
so
amazing. Wow,
it was
phenomenal.
Amazing. We had been nominated, I think, for about 4 or 5 years with that title, but we actually won first place this year. So,
to talk about that experience, how did you find out you had won, and what happened after that?
Well, we took a group of students that were also nominated for some of their projects that they did for the radio station at the college, COD Roadrunner Radio, and we took them back, and we all went to the awards ceremony. We knew we were nominated, but we didn't know we were winners. So when they called our name, of course, we just went crazy.
Yeah.
So it was a great, great experience, a great conference. And you know what else was really good about that conference is Al Roker was one of our keynote speakers, and he was involved in radio back in the day, and he told his stories about getting, you know, involved in broadcasting and getting his foot in the door in radio. So it was a really interesting experience. I think we all learned. The students, though, it was funny. Al Roker. Who's Al Roker? Oh, the Macy's Day Parade guy.
That's
right?
How they knew him.
Watching on Thanksgiving Day, you know. So it was a great experience. But, yeah, I'm very proud of what we've done at the college. I have some fabulous faculty that believe in everything we do. And, you know, COD is a great place. We're giving students a great opportunity to learn at a reasonable cost from fabulous instructors and getting
national
recognition.
For many students, it's free, right?
Yeah. So for students graduating from a local high school, I mean, they have to maintain a certain grade point average. They have to be involved. There's certain criteria that they have to reach, but it's a really great deal.
Well, I think we kind of encouraged our kids that they could go that route.
Yeah.
And then because after 2 years, you can transfer, and it's almost an automatic in to virtually any college you want to go to. And it's a great way to do that.
But there was another place where they could spend your money.
Right.
Yes, yeah. And they much preferred to do that. Yeah.
Kids sometimes have a different idea of how things should operate.
No, we're not doing that. We're going
to... What did you always have an interest in teaching?
You know what I did? And that actually, when I started working the morning show at KESQ, Steve Geary was a meteorologist. He was teaching at the college, and he had to leave because he went to Florida to take another job. And he said, Laura Lee, why don't you teach? You have your master's degree. And I'm like, never thought about it. But I did a class, a night class, a couple years, and I really enjoyed it. And then when I had my daughter, I started teaching more because I was able to be flexible with my schedule and I didn't work at the station anymore. So I did love it. I love giving back. I love helping these students get into the industry because it's a lot of work. It's, you know, not always easy to get into. So I think
it's a hard industry to break into. And once you do, the financial rewards are almost none.
Right.
I mean, it's a really low-paying entry level. I mean, it's...
And you know what? No one ever told me that, Patrick.
No one ever... Oh, no. Yeah, no. At least
Why,
I knew.
Why, guys? I didn't... That first paycheck, gosh. You know, I think my first year, my parents had to help support me that first
my
job.
My first job was in my full-time job, and I worked part-time at the TVC. Yeah. My first full-time job paid $13,600.
Yeah. Yeah, not much. Not much.
You know, we're pretty deep
now
into
I'm making
this.
Almost double that, and it's
oh,
huge.
Way to go.
Huge.
That's awesome.
Huge.
So you got a good raise there.
Yeah, no,
we're pretty far into this, and we haven't mentioned yet that Laura Lee is a recipient and was recently entered into the Coachella Valley. Journalism Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Thank
Congratulations.
You.
That's a big deal.
It was a huge honor, and, you know, I got the notification in the fall that I was... you know, nominated for this, and I was just like, wow, you know. And I think you too, I always think journalists that are in the trenches telling the stories on TV or writing stories for newspapers, they're the ones who get recognized, but they really recognize me for my educational part of it, and I love that, and I was very thankful because, you know, we have produced so many great students and put them in the industry. I mean, a lot of my students are working at KESQ, Desert Sun, NBC Palm Springs. So we're getting them there. We're getting them prepared. But that was a huge honor. I really was.
Well, I got to tell you, it's
so well
the only one I knew before that was Bruce Fessier. But you really turned it into something legitimate when you became a member.
Well, you know,
Bruce
you know, Bruce listens to every one of these.
Oh, yes, I know.
Oh, and you know what? When just hearing the folks that got it the year before me, I was just like, wow. Did you guys make a mistake on this? Like, really? I mean, you know, it's... It was an honor. It really was. There's someone to recognize the work you do and you love and feel passionately about it.
I think your work at the college has been so important, and you know, you really continue to impact the face of journalism in the Coachella Valley. Even you still work. You filled in again very recently when Angela Chin was at him, but your students carry on your legacy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really important thing. And you're also working with P-Swift. You're on the board of Palm Springs Women in Film and Television.
Yes, and we're also working to raise money for students and future creatives in television, film, media, and it's been a great organization to be involved in. I love the mission. I love the people that I work with. It's nice to connect with other media folks here, too. A lot of them coming in from Los Angeles, moving to the Coachella Valley. It's, you know, we're all like-minded. We have things to talk about of similar interests, and it's really great.
You just directed a movie.
I did.
A short called Perfect.
Perfect,
it
yes.
It starred Randy Florence.
You look familiar.
I know. I was going to say, you acted in my
film. I remember
film.
You yelling at me on the set a couple of times.
Was I that bad, Randy?
No, you were not
I thought
bad.
I was the nicest director.
You were the nicest
Canadian,
director I'd
forget.
Ever worked with.
Well,
that was
good.
My first film.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. So the Kim Waltrip Filmmakers Lab is part of P-Swift, and it's a learning environment. So, you know, you're working with professionals who are mentoring the amateurs, people that have never done this before. And
you captured
there's
this
a picture
great
of Brandy.
Image.
That
looks a lot better
film.
Than seeing
yes.
it a 14-foot nostril up on the
yes.
screen.
You did a fabulous job, by the way. You're two lines or three lines, but you just had... You had the right attitude and the feel that we were looking for.
Thank
and I
you.
Love that. And you just made the character come alive, which
Thank
I thought
you.
It was fabulous.
Still my favorite picture that I have
we'll
of Randy.
You, next time we'll give you a few more lines, Randy.
I'm still waiting for my SAG card. When does that come in?
Soon.
Oh, I think that takes a little while, but we'll work on getting you one.
I'm
definitely.
Patient.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, so that was a great experience. You know, like, why is a journalist doing co-directing? But it was storytelling, you know, and I think that... having a good sense of what works and what doesn't, it was great. I learned a lot. I brought some skill in that I had, but I also learned a lot from that experience as well.
So what are you going to direct next?
I don't know.
Do you have the bug now to do it?
You know, I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know if I have the bug. I'm glad I did it. It's really fun to see the process of filmmaking. It's not about one person.
Yeah.
It's about multiple people, the collaboration,
the
unifying.
That's where Randy told me it was all about Randy.
Well, we started
for those three lines.
We started.
I didn't realize there was another story. I just walked in and said
people?
Those and it's over.
It started all about Randy, but we had to knock him down a little bit and say, hey, okay.
Very well.
You're not the star here. No.
Three lines.
Everyone's
six
a star.
Nose hairs.
Six nose hairs. I don't ever want to see my head that big on a screen again.
Yeah.
Wait, do I remember right? Was one of your daughters on the set?
Yes, my daughter worked on sound. So she was a member of the Filmmakers Lab and loves movie making as well. So she came on. So it was really nice to have her on the set and work with her. And like I said, you know, filmmaking, it's not work, it's fun, but you're working hard, right? And
it's long days.
We did work some long days. But
I felt like I got the true movie experience. Yeah. I think I was on set for 17 hours, and I was live for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when you're on a set like that, like this is new for me too. And then you go do your regular job and it's like, oh, this is boring. Now I know why people want to be in that creative industry.
Yeah.
I mean, filmmaking is fabulous.
No, it's exhilarating being on a set.
It is. It's a lot of work, but you have a lot of fun too. And we had a great team of people to work with.
It was so much fun.
Our people were fabulous. The food was good. The hair and makeup people were good. The photographer, everyone was great.
Do you think this is something your daughter will pursue?
Yes, she loves filmmaking, but in the practical world, she is working for a research company doing some marketing and social media work. So she loves that as well. So she's keeping her options open, which I think is good. But she definitely had a great experience. So, yeah, she's looking at a few other projects she wants to work on. And who knows? We'll
see. Any of the daughters following mom's path?
No, just Madeline and my only media. Yeah. My younger wants to be an attorney. She's actually interning with the district attorney's office this summer. So she wants to be that.
That's a good lawyer.
Choice. Yeah.
It's a really good choice.
It is a good choice. So she'll be that badass, lawyer someday that will, put those people behind bars or not put them behind bars, whatever she chooses.
You'll probably
she
meet her later.
You will be interviewing her in a couple years,
That's
Patrick.
Not what I meant, but yeah.
No. Remember, I married an attorney.
Oh, that's
you
true.
Did.
But
you
a
did.
Family law attorney, which, of course, is still a major mistake on your part.
Oh, that's Patrick, wow.
It's the hardest way to pay a retainer.
So let's go back to CD.
I can say that because she hasn't listened. She doesn't even know I do a podcast.
She'll never listen to it.
Oh, okay, well, that's good.
She has no idea.
Back to COD. Any success stories of students that you've taught there that have gone on to...
She flunks all of them.
I'm sorry. You're never going to make it in this.
Well, I had one student that actually... she wasn't a journalism student, but she came through my program, took some classes. She actually performed at Coachella with Giselle Wu and the Night Owls.
Oh, yeah.
She was
I love Giselle.
Great,
she's
wonderful
terrific. She's
person.
Been on Eye in the Desert a bunch of times. We've had her perform there. She's great.
She's wonderful. She worked for the radio station, really immersed herself in that as a music director and a station manager, and she was lovely to work with. All the folks that went over to KESQ, a lot of them have been there for years now and are doing fabulous things.
Who are some of your students that are working for? I should know this.
Jesus, the digital media.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize he was one of your students.
He's one of my students.
Almost everything you see, if you download our app and you read our website...
Right.
Almost all of the stuff Jesus puts out. So he's
Bruno and Isaiah, the two producers over there, were two of my students.
What? This is crazy. I know all these kids.
Yeah, I know Holly Hinman has interned over there. She's fabulous.
She just graduated
from Loyola Marymount.
She's a dynamo.
One of the hardest working students I think I've had. I was the editor of the newspaper. Just fabulous. Good attitude. She'll go places.
There's a bright future.
Right. So,
we should get her on the podcast before she gets too big.
That's true.
She might not come back.
Have you been a guest speaker at any of the classes?
No. COD? No, she's trying to educate these kids.
Well, you got to show them both sides. Here's what success looks like.
Here's a guy who's been here for 23 years because he can't get another job.
Oh, I was thinking about that, Patrick. You've been here a long time, but you have had such an amazing career. I tell people this all the time. All of the things you have done in the Coachella Valley. And for the people here, I love those stories because, people can come and go, But you've stayed here, you embrace this community, and you've made it home. And I applaud you for that. And all of the recognition you get, you deserve it.
I tell this story all the time. You do not want to walk into Acrisure Arena with Patrick Evans. Because it'll be 45 minutes before you come close to getting to your seat.
You get stopped a lot by people, right?
People love Patrick.
But that's, you know, and you've been on TV off and on for the same length of time. People just get familiar.
They do.
And especially, you know, I've been very lucky, and I've been on TV for 23 years in one place. Whether they like you or not, they recognize you because they're like, oh, I know that guy. Because, you know, but it was funny when you came back in to do the anchoring while Angela was out on maternity leave. It was a little humbling because I'm sitting there doing exactly the same job that I was 23 years ago. We went like, and Laura Lee's gone on.
Laura Lee's a journalism
Hall of Fame inductee, and she's a professor, and she's got tenure, and she's like, "And so, how are you?" And I'm like, "Still doing the same old shit." So.
You know what, though? And I love my job teaching. I love the media, though. Coming back and filling in was probably the best experience for me ever. You guys have such a great time. You work hard, but you have such a great time in that studio.
It is.
It's really a great career.
I mean, it's a little different than the movie experience, but it is. I mean, you're on set, and it is fun. It's a fun environment.
Do you still get that thrill walking into the studio?
I do. And I, you know, I think a lot of people that I talk to that have been in the industry and have left, it never really leaves them. They always think, what if I would have stayed? What if I would have done it this way? You know? And people have moved on for various reasons, you know, better schedules for family, better jobs, those types of things. But
needed to make a living.
Yeah. That has something to do with it. I think that's a big one. But you know, there's something special about that industry, and it's hard to, unless you've been there and worked it and done it, it's hard to explain it to people, right, Patrick? I mean, you would agree.
I 100% agree. I mean, it's such an electrifying atmosphere. And I mean, I started working at a television station when I was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And I could not imagine being in any other environment, being in a newsroom environment. I mean, it's always electric. There's always something going on.
Right.
And when the worst things happen, you see the best in the people you work with because everybody comes together. We have to get this on the air. This is really important. We, you know, it is a really just, I think, an exhilarating place to work.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely right. And it's hard to, you know, coming back to it, it really opened my eyes again and how much I love this industry. But I'm also helping students get into it as well.
That's what I love about what you're doing is that you are, and I didn't realize how many of those kids in our newsroom.
Yeah.
Came through your program.
And there's more, too. I know Sarah Snow was with you guys. I think we had some audio folks, directors that have come through our program. So, yeah.
Well, you've been here 28 years or so now. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen since you first got here to the Valley as a whole? And then within the media?
Well, development, for one, in the Coachella Valley. I mean, this was a sleepy town when I moved here. Yeah. I was like, okay, 9 o'clock, everything's shut down. There's nothing to do. Made me think I don't want to be here very long. I want to be a couple years out of here, be in a bigger city where it's a little bit more exciting. But, you know, then you have kids and you raise them here and you realize, wow, this is a great community of supportive people. You know, everyone's looking out for your kids. It's like a small town feel, but it has a lot going on, right? Yeah. So I think the development here has been fascinating to see more people and more industry moved out here. It's been great. In the news business, you know, gosh, there's so many changes in news. It's hard to pinpoint just one. I think, you know, the frustrating thing for me, and I support local news 100% because that's where I think you get the real stories.
Absolutely.
We need more local news. And, you know, I always say turn off the national, watch them, but watch more local and support local because that's where you're really getting the stories that should matter to you about what's happening in local government, what's going on with our local politicians. That's where people can make a difference, right?
Absolutely.
But I get frustrated with the whole, you know, the misinformation, the fake news. Like, people don't trust the news, and our younger generation does not seem to be embracing it as much.
Well,
either.
And it's amazing to me, and I think you probably are dealing with this in your classroom.
Yeah.
Kids get their news predominantly now from social media sites.
Yep.
And it's funny to me because, you know, they're the same kind of kids who'll say, oh, you can't trust what you see on TV. Yet they'll trust 100% something on TikTok, which is total BS.
Right.
It's total garbage.
Yeah.
There's no basis. And none of these people understand what journalistic ethics are. and but they eat it up.
Yeah.
Because it's consumable on your phone. It's easy to get.
Yep.
And you can simply scroll.
And you can learn everything about everything in 30 seconds.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's entertaining. And you're right. They do have a short attention span. So, hey, I know the answers in 30 seconds to what's going on in our world, all the problems.
Do you see any of this in your daughters?
A little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I try to set them straight, but I think they do have that mindset, and that's the younger generation. I really do think that more people need to study journalism. Take a class, a news literacy class, a media literacy class. Understand the whole process of media and the business of media and how it's impacting, especially our younger generation. I think it's really important. I think that's one of the biggest challenges we face is the misinformation in our world, and people just don't know how to consume it. They don't know how to sift through it and have those critical thinking skills.
Do you think there's a future for local news?
Oh, absolutely. I think journalism, I believe, and I'm optimistic, but it has to stay. It has to stay. Yeah. How we get it may vary. The platforms, the technology, obviously. You know, if kids are getting their news on TikTok, we got to get out there on TikTok and show them the real news, right? I mean, I do think we need to reach out and go where they're getting their information, but, you know, I can't imagine a world without journalism. Then we're just being fed a bunch of propaganda and a bunch of,
that never happens.
Lies. No, it never happens. But, that's where it could lead, and unfortunately, we're in some ways there already.
Well, I think we're extremely lucky to have someone like you who's teaching these kids, because I think you are showing
that's where it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just journalism students. I mean, I get a lot of students in that are other majors, you know, math, science, but they're required to take a media literacy course, so they do. And, you know, my goal is to open their eyes, you know, put on that critical thinking cap and really listen and think about what you're consuming and why you think the way you do and how this message is impacting you and so forth. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love my job. I am very grateful to be at the college. We have some exciting things happening in our media department and our development.
You have a new campus opening
up. We do, and we have a fabulous film studio, television studio, new radio podcast studios coming there, a new newsroom and journalism.
So will you be moving over to that campus?
We will, yeah. Our whole program, when it's completed, we'll be moving over there. But we're really excited to work under one roof and really collaborate as media because, you know, our core mission is storytelling. But whether we go into film, television, podcasting, radio, newspaper, digital newspaper, it all stems from a story. So teaching those skills.
You guys aren't still teaching newspaper, are you? Because there's no place
for
newspaper.
No, we don't. We are teaching. We do have we do have a news publication, but no printed anymore. We stopped that during COVID. But, you know, who picks up a paper anymore? I love the physical paper, but that just kind of dates me.
Personally, how did the pandemic impact you?
I think
besides having three kids
and pulling
at home
out
all
each
day,
other's yeah. hair, you know, I think it made me think differently about trying new things, starting new things, rethinking the way I teach. Mm. Even to this day, I'm still teaching half online and half in person, but I find that it's more convenient for students to learn online. Yeah. You know, they're working, they're parents, especially at the community college level. We got a very diverse group of students. So you have people coming in from all walks of life. We need to make sure we cater to their lifestyle and give them opportunities to be educated in those, aspects. So, you know, I've done a lot of, distance education training. Now I'm going through some AI training to figure that all out, which is exciting, but also scary.
It's really scary.
So continual learning process. But
COD has a kind of a history of media and entertainment people coming out of there over the years, don't they?
Yeah,
Jimmy Kimmel and Carson Daly.
Carson Daly. I mean, I think a lot of those folks would just, what was Carson Daly? Golf? Took some golf classes. He was not a media student, but, you know, like I said, we have a great program.
It worked out well for him in the end.
I think it did.
Yeah, he did okay.
He's doing okay.
He's doing okay,
and Kimmel, I think, is okay.
I think he's okay.
Yeah.
He's got a ways to go.
He's going to hit it big someday.
He's making
he
a living. He's making a living. He's doing all right.
I think he's doing all right. So, COD didn't hurt them. I think it gave him a little boost.
So did I also hear you say that you were tenured?
I am.
Wow.
Yes,
so you've got a job for life.
I do.
Congratulations.
I have to do a good job, Randy. I mean, that's part of it. You
I have to keep doing this podcast.
You know, you go through the tenure process.
Hey, 200 more episodes and you'll be tenured.
Oh, thank God.
But, you know, people don't realize that you are continually evaluated. So just because I'm tenured doesn't mean that I'm free. I still have student evaluations and, you know, faculty evaluations. So they make sure we're doing our job, and I appreciate that because it keeps me on my toes. And
when you leave at the end of the day as a professor, how do you know you've had a good day?
Oh, if students are not afraid to ask questions, I can see a little bit more confidence in the way they present themselves, and they're getting what I'm learning. I mean, I feel like that's where it is. One thing I think is the most important thing, I mean, I'm all for teaching, you know, skills and the textbook knowledge, but, you know, a lot of these students just need confidence building. And if they walk in, they're not going to learn anything until they feel that they can learn something. So, and maybe it's our student population. I just find that a lot of them coming in just broken. You know, they don't know. They don't know what direction they want to go into. They don't know. They don't think they have what it takes to be an announcer or a journalist. And just getting them thinking that, hey, I can. They don't have a lot of support from home either.
Right.
So they don't have, a lot of parents say, why are you studying media? That seems like a waste of time. Right. So they have to get over that and believe that, hey, there's something here for me if they want to pursue it. So, yeah.
Where would you like to see your professorship in 5 years? What kind of things do you think you're going to have to start teaching going forward to keep everybody up with all the changes?
Yeah, well, AI is one of them. I am attending a seminar this summer, learning all the artificial intelligence stuff. I don't even know what I'm going to be learning, but I think that's important for us to really embrace and not just, I think, you know, that it, everyone thinks it's bad. You know, there's so much negative around artificial intelligence, but there's a lot of good that can be done too. And I think being educated on how to use it properly and how to educate our students can be very valuable. And I'm just really excited to get over to Palm Springs. I know the Coachella Valley has been waiting for that campus for a long time.
It's been a long time coming. So and I think everybody's going to be excited about
that. I will tell you that I think this Coachella Valley should be very proud of all the folks that have been working so hard to make this happen. And we're going to do it right. We've got some great people on board. We've got some great ideas, and I'm super excited.
That's cool.
Laura Lee, thank you so much for
this
coming.
This is really, really cool.
Director, Hall of Fame inductee, professor, media icon in the Coachella Valley, and now guest star on Big Conversations.
Yeah. And maybe personally responsible for my next career
I
hit it big in the movies.
When you make that Academy Award speech, Laura Lee Jackson is going to have to be one of the people you thank.
Until they yank me off for not supposed to be on the stage.
That's right. I was your first film,
you
right?
Were.
You worked
my
on.
First
yes,
director.
Yes, I love it.
Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure working with you,
Laura
Rander.
Lee, thank you so much. Terrific to have you.
This is really cool.
Thank you. And it was so nice seeing you, Patrick. I like seeing you at this time of the day, better than 4 a.m.
Yeah.
in the morning.
But nobody
always likes seeing you.
You know, the morning show is always fun.
It is.
But no one's super happy to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning. So
it's hard to be fully awake.
Yes.
You know, it's like you're getting
you got your
there.
Coffee and you're like working. It's like, man, are we really up this? But you know, that honestly, in my early experiences at CBS Local 2, when I was working after Rich Fields left, I was moved to the morning show.
Yeah.
And working with you and Tom was such a great experience, and it was fun to kind of reprise that of recent. So.
Right, right. And sometimes, you know, the audience is half asleep, which is sometimes a good thing. Right?
It's a better thing.
It's
truly
a better thing.
Our thanks to Laura Lee. Our thanks to Mr. Randy Florence.
Thank you.
You did a great job.
This was a good one.
Yeah, I knew it would be. John McMullen, thank you very much. Thank you to the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor. Thank you to Skip Page and his team here at Little Bar, who are always very gracious hosts for Big Conversations Little Bar. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode. We're available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. I'm Patrick Evans. Thanks for listening.
Meet your neighbors, fascinating and grand. Each conversation, a wave on the sand. Raise your glass and join the ride, where stories and dreams fully collide. At Big Conversations Little Bar, brought to you by McCallum, our guiding star. Patrick and Randy, tales retold.